In 1714, George I was brought across to London from his native Hanover and crowned King of Great Britain. Now, to many Scots, especially the Highlanders, they were no longer, in their minds, being ruled by their rightful king. Their rightful king was James in France, son of James II of England and the 7th of Scotland, referred to by the English as the pretender to the throne, the man who, were he to be crowned, would be James VIII of Scotland and the 3rd of England. Minor revolts had occurred over the previous 26 years since William of Orange had deposed the Stuart king. But the first main Jacobite uprising occurred in 1715, convened by the Earl of Mar. It started in Braemar on the 6th of September, but it was badly organized, and James arrived from France just as the rebellion was being put down. And so he went back to France again. Nothing much more was to happen for a further 30 years, during which time he had had a son who had grown up and reached his mid-20s, and his name was Prince Charles Edward Stuart, the man who was to become known as Bonnie Prince Charlie. In 1745, Prince Charles Edward Stuart arrived in the west of Scotland for a rendezvous at a place called Glenfinnan. And there, awaiting him, were several Highland chiefs, and it was a chance for him to make up his mind whether he had sufficient support in order to claim the throne for his father. The decision was made when Cameron of Loch Eel stepped forward and pledged himself and his clan to the prince's cause. And so the prince unfurled the Stuart banner, and there declared his father to be king, and began the march around Scotland, gathering more men and support as he went. Now, the English, under King George II, by now, realizing that there was a rebellion starting, made various attempts to put it down, and the prince and his forces were engaged in several battles with the English as they moved around Scotland. And each time, the Highlanders were successful and the English defeated. And with every success, so the prince's army grew in size and in enthusiasm. Finally, the decision was made and the army marched southwards into England and down towards London. It reached as far as Derby, just 120 miles from the capital, and then paused. The prince had been expecting further Jacobite support from England and Wales, which hadn't actually appeared at the time. But there was support, and plenty of it. There were many people who favoured the idea of returning a Catholic Stuart king to the throne. We now know, in hindsight, that London was thrown into panic, and George II was preparing to flee the country. But the prince and his army received news that three large armies were converging upon them. Reluctantly, and against the prince's instincts, they decided to make their way back to the Highlands to regroup and gain more support. So, they retreated back to Inverness and made that their base. Meanwhile, the English forces were put under a new commander, the king's younger son, William Augustus, Duke of Cumberland. He came with the English forces and made camp on the coast of the Moray Firth, near Nairn. Between the prince and his army at Inverness and the Duke of Cumberland and his forces lay Culloden Moor, and it was there that the final battle would take place. But the night before the battle was the Duke of Cumberland's birthday, and the Highlanders thought to themselves, perhaps if we make a surprise night march, maybe we'll find the English camp under the influence of alcohol after celebrating the Duke's birthday. They tried the march. It was a failure, and they had to retreat back to Culloden Moor, arriving there cold, tired, and hungry, with insufficient food laid on to feed them. The Duke of Cumberland and the English forces, comparatively fresh and rested, followed up behind. The Battle of Culloden Moor took place. It lasted 45 minutes and was all over. The Highlanders under Bonnie Prince Charlie were completely and utterly defeated. The prince himself became a hunted outlaw and was moved around the Highlands of Scotland and the islands for the next 5 months. But the atrocities which were committed after the battle by the Duke of Cumberland and his forces caused an English historian to write, not a Scottish historian, an English historian, wrote, "The atrocities committed in the battle's aftermath were such as have never before or since so disgraced a British army. The wounded, the dying, were put to the sword. The English soldiers moved into the countryside around in search of survivors. Men, women, and children were brought out of their cottages, whether or not they'd been involved in the battle or the campaign. Many of them were tortured, put to death, and their houses burnt down. It was to earn for the Duke of Cumberland the title Butcher Cumberland among the Scots. To the English, of course. He was a hero. He had won a great battle and put down a serious threat. They named a flower after him, Sweet William. The Scots promptly renamed it Stinking Willie. This campaign of attrition didn't just occur immediately after the battle. It went on for a considerable period. Months. Years. It was a deliberate campaign in which to prevent any further uprisings from the Highlands of Scotland. It was known as the Pacification of the Highlands. And it was at this time that the Scots recalled those words of the Pictish chieftain Calgagus. They make a desert and they call it peace. The Highlanders were forbidden to wear the kilt. They were forbidden to possess arms. And there was a concerted attempt to destroy Gaelic culture in order to prevent any further reoccurrence. The prince, meanwhile, with a price of £30,000 on his head, which was an absolute fortune in those days, was being moved around amongst humble peasants. And nobody ever gave him away. While the biggest manhunt that has ever been staged in the British Isles went on, extending even to the Outer Hebrides, where the prince had been taken for refuge. On the island of Uist, he met a young lady by the name of Flora MacDonald, who was visiting a relative. She was quite a high-born lady, a supporter of the Jacobite cause, and she readily agreed to help the fugitive prince to escape. She had him dressed as her serving maid, Betty Burke, and together they were taken by boat back to the island of Skye, where Flora MacDonald lived. There, he was moved by supporters around Skye and eventually taken in a stolen boat back across to the Scottish mainland, where he remained a little longer before, finally, a French frigate arrived to take him back to France. He probably intended, and indeed his supporters expected, that one day he would return at the head of a much stronger French expeditionary force. In the event, he became little more than a hanger-on around the courts of Europe and eventually died a disconsolate old man in Rome. And with him, in 1788, died the Stuart claim to the throne of Britain. But the effects of the Highland defeat at Culloden were not over. The long-term effects were only just beginning. And that's our final story. Next time.